Okay, well, I am excited to be here today. When I was assigned this talk on memorization and I knew I had to spend 45 minutes on telling y'all about memorization, I thought, how in the world am I going to come up with stuff for 45 minutes about memorization? So I did what I always do when I don't know much about something. I went down to the library and I went online and I bought a bunch of books, a lot more than these books, and I read them. And my mind was truly blown away. There's a world out there of memorization and memory techniques that I didn't even imagine was there. And so what it boils down to is I have probably enough for 2 or 3 weeks. But we won't give it all to you today. But I want to give you a little bit and enough to whet your appetites so you do what I did and you read some of these books and you take these techniques home to your students. But what I want to tell you before I start talking here, telling you this talk, is my mind is full of this topic. I have probably spent 100 hours, probably a lot more than that, researching this talk. And there's a lot of things I didn't include. And if you don't understand something that I'm saying, raise your hand. And let me clarify it. If any questions, any thoughts, let me clarify it, because I want you to understand this, and I'm not quite sure how my trails here are all working. One of the very first things I read in this talk, when I was studying this talk, is I read about a man long ago by the name of Simonides. And this is, I'm guessing, 2,000 odd years ago. And he was in a banquet, and he was sitting around the great communal table, and he was a Roman, I think. He was from Crete, I don't know where the banquet was, and they were all having this wonderful party and eating and drinking and having a great time. And some aides came to the door, some servants came to the door and asked Simonides of Crete to come outside for a minute. They had a message for him. So Simonides got up from his table, and he walked to the door of the huge palace they were in, and he was listening to the message, when all of a sudden the building behind him, the massive stone building behind him, collapsed and crushed everybody underneath it. It crushed them so badly that they didn't know who had been crushed. When they dug through the rubble, they couldn't tell what the bodies were, just mashed little bits of ketchup and hamburger. I don't know what all it was. And so Simonides... everybody was screaming and panicking, and Simonides of Crete closed his eyes and pictured this massive banquet hall with these hundreds of guests, and in his mind he saw each one, where they were sitting and what they were doing, the laughing. As he left the hall, this was in his mind, and he told the people, the weeping and hysterical people, he led them through the ruins and showed them the little spot of blood that was their relatives, each and every one. And after this, he developed and wrote down for all posterity the beginnings of what we understand today as memory technique. And for years and years in our ancestry, it was very commonly accepted. This is how you remembered things. And then I read about this man. I'll tell you about this technique. That's what we're going to talk about. But we're going to talk a little bit before that. Then I read about another man. He was a journalist in Russia. And one morning he was sitting around. He was a very low, on the bottom of the pay grade as far as journalist goes. And they were sitting around the large conference table in the morning. And the boss of this whole newspaper, whatever firm it was giving everybody their orders for the day. Their contacts, the addresses of where they're going to go. And this reporter, the book that I read about him in, and I read about him in a couple different places, they refer to him as S, I guess because he's a medical subject and you don't call them by name. So S is sitting there in his chair, and he's not writing anything down. And so the boss notices this, and when his orders are done, he calls S aside, and he's like, so... you're a reporter here in this firm, and if you ever want to get anywhere in this firm, you're going to have to take it more seriously. You're going to have to take notes. You're going to have to, you know, this is a real job. This is serious. And if you want to make headway in this firm, you're going to have to treat it that way. And S is puzzled. He asks, he said, what do you mean? And his boss said, well, do you remember what I told you to do this morning? And so S opens his mouth, and he tells the boss every word he said in the order that he said it to every person in the room around him. And his boss is just thunderstruck. And then S opens his mouth and tells him what he said to them the day before. And his boss says, you know what? Cancel your plans for the day. Go down to the doctor and get your head checked out. And he did. And the doctor was horrified. This guy could remember anything and everything. There was nothing in... The doctor read him. And for years and years, this doctor did studies on this poor reporter. And things like lists of numbers, thousands of numbers long. S could remember them, forwards and backwards. Lists of poetry, lists of random syllables, muff, gub, you know. S could remember them perfectly. He could remember them 15 years later, perfectly, frontwards and backwards. His mind indiscriminately remembered everything. Now, S used this same technique we're going to talk about today. But his happened naturally. He automatically did this and could remember. And incidentally, S wasn't a very good success with his life because he remembered everything. And he couldn't separate what was important and what wasn't important. And so his mind was just full of memories that he didn't need and he didn't know how to separate those. And one source I read said that, you know, the ability to forget is what makes us human. To forget the mundane and remember the important, but we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about memory today. Then I read about this man by the name of Ben Pridmore. And he was the reigning world champion in memory. And he's just a normal person. But with these techniques, he can remember 1,528 random digits in an hour and can repeat them back to you much later. He can memorize a deck of cards in maybe 30 seconds, the order of a deck of cards, which is actually pretty hard to do. And he can memorize any poem you want to give to him in just very little time. And he also memorized in order 50,000 digits, the random digits of pi. And these are just random numbers. 50,000 digits! I can't even remember my own phone number. This is unbelievable. And you know what? Ben Pridmore couldn't either. But using these techniques, he was able to do some amazing things. And then I read this fascinating, fascinating book by Joshua Fior, this guy right here, Moonwalking with Einstein. And he wrote the story of his journey. As a reporter, he was called to come and report on one of these memory championships, competitions. And he was blown away with what he saw. And he wondered, he said, I wonder if I could do that. And so he got talking with some friends that he made in this memorizing world. And they said, we'll teach you. And the next year, using these techniques and this practice, 1 year later, by studying an hour or two a day, he won the U.S. Memory Championship, which was pretty impressive. And I kept reading that this is how our ancestors remembered things. This is who we used to be. And the great sagas of human history, the Iliad, the Odyssey, all these were stories by memory. They were memorized and passed down, and we remembered these things until the printing press became widely known. And we started just letting the pages be our memory. And we're going to talk about why that isn't such a great thing, after all. It's a great thing, but it's not the greatest thing. Well, however that works. And I kept reading, that these are normal people. All these people are normal. And they're employing these techniques, fantastically effective techniques, to remember things. And so can we, apparently. And then I read this little story, or I knew this story from whenever. There was a fish that lived in the pond. And one day, a fish from the sea came to visit the fish in the pond. And the fish from the sea said, you don't know what you're missing. I live in the sea, and the sea is big and beautiful beyond your wildest imagination. I mean, it goes for thousands of miles. There's fish in there, whales in there that are bigger than your whole pond. And how wonderful the sea was. And the fish from the pond said, "This fish, this guy, is nuts. I don't want to have anything more to do with somebody that's that nutty." And so he went off and never talked to the fish from the sea again. And all of a sudden I thought, you know, that's kind of like me right now. I read about these things, and I think there's a gimmick, this is nuts. But who lost in the story of the fish in the pond and the sea? It was the fish from the pond. Because he limited what he would believe, he limited his life, and he lived the rest of his life there in that pond. Which actually probably wasn't a very bad life, when it all boiled down to, but, you know, he limited himself. Let's first talk about a little bit, before we go into these techniques, why should we memorize things? Is it relevant in this world of Google and smartphones and information at our fingertips? I can't tell you how much we should, and I'll tell you why. But at the end of the day, we don't really need to know 50,000 random digits of pi like Ben Pridmore. I mean, that's a little irrelevant. It would be fun to memorize a deck of cards in 30 seconds, but it probably won't really help us in our lives. But how about using this technique, as people do every day, and teach their students to do, there are schools who teach this technique, using these techniques to memorize the states and capitals, the presidents, your periodic table of elements, your times tables. The great saga of Anabaptist history, or any history for that matter. People's names. And how about the Word of God? Learning is not memorizing. When we learn something, it's when we hear and we understand some information. Memorization is being able to recall that information. And making that information a part of you, becoming essentially who you are. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Blink, fascinating story, talks about your memories, your conscious memories and your subconscious memories helping you to make decisions at the spur of the moment under tremendous pressure. And your memories, what's in your mind, are what you use to make the decisions. And he is absolutely right. The knowledge we have in our brains is what we use to make decisions. We make different decisions, better decisions, when we have the information about whatever we're wondering about, the facts about an issue. We make better decisions if we know the facts than if we don't know the facts. And you know what? It doesn't help us a bit that the information is available on Google. Many times these decisions we make are made spur of the moment. They're made shortly. This is the greatest argument for memorization. If you look at the world around you today, I don't know if people have ever made this stupid of decisions. You look at the decisions they make of what they're doing with their lives, and you think, how could you be so stupid? But you know what? They don't have the facts. Our memories are to blame. You can't make the right decisions with facts that you don't have in your mind. That is why you need to memorize things. And I don't think I can overstate that. Get it in your mind. It's not enough to have it in your book. It's not enough to have it on your phone. It needs to be in your mind. So let's talk a little bit, before we go into the technique here, about how our memories work. Because if we understand how our memories work, we'll understand a lot better how to teach this technique and how to use this technique. Now, scientists spent many years trying to discover your memory hold that is in your brain. They theorize that your brain is a little bit like a camcorder or a camera or something like that, and all the memories that you, all the things you see, get kind of downloaded into maybe the central chip in your brain. Well, they had a whole bunch of rats that they trained how to go through little mazes, and then they would cut the little rats' heads open and cut out pieces of their brain and see if it affected how the rats could go through the mazes. And it didn't affect it. The rats, of course, were sick and extremely disturbed, but they still knew how to go through the mazes. Very frustrating for the scientists. And I'm guessing probably even more frustrating for the rats. But they did learn how our memories work, or they theorize how our memories work. Your brain is full of neurons. Trillions of neurons. And let's just pretend today that I am a neuron in your brain, and I'm floating around in your brain, and these are my dendrites. Neurons have dendrites. And these are my spines, my fingers. All right? Now, when I want to make a memory, well, maybe you should come up here and help me just a little bit. I go and I meet another neuron. And as I meet him, he stands here a lot like me. And my dendrites, my spines, come very close to his spines. And they almost touch. And they make what is called, this little space here, is called a synapse. Right? And when I make a synapse, my dendrite touches his dendrite, and we shake a little bit and transfer a little bit through our dendrites. And if it's a big memory, well, it is all. I mean, it involves lots and lots of us. If we'd be making a memory this morning, all of us would hold hands, and there'd be these synapses, and this collective room full of neurons together made a memory. Thank you so much. And your memories are all made like that, and they're just floating around. Your memories are not data written down in your brain. They're a collection of connections in your brain, and that's what makes them resilient. But that also is one of the things that makes your memories change, because these connections shift and they move and they do all kinds of things. Now, that is why they never could find the memory hold in these rats' brains, because there is no memory hold. Your brain, these neurons are rolling around and sliding around in your whole head, and these collections of connections are memories, and they're all interconnected, and it's pretty cool. There is a study that suggests that everything we ever see or experience is recorded in our minds in some way. These connections are in there. And how they found this is I wanted to do it today, but I did not have the time, is the lecturers would have a projector on the wall, and they would project a series of images, maybe 40 or 50 or 60 images, and then they would ask their class, do you remember all these images? And they would only be up there for about a half a second. And these are images like a basketball or Michael Jordan or a thistle or, you know, a cow. These are all different random images. And, of course, their students are like, you know, they're trying to remember, and they can't remember it. And they couldn't remember all these images. But the scientists, the lecturers said, but now let's try this. And they would put beside the image they had already seen, they would put a new image. And they would go through the whole series again, looking at the images they had already seen, but beside each image was an image they hadn't seen. And they asked the students to point out which image they had seen. And the students easily were able to point out with 100% accuracy which images they had seen. They kept on with this study, and they found that people can remember, in this image scenario, which images they had seen and not seen with an 80 or 90% accuracy, up to 10,000 images. They're all in there, in your mind, what you've seen. This talk, you'll probably forget a lot from this talk, but it'll be in there, floating around somewhere. And these memories change, and most of them you won't ever be able to access, but they're still in there. So this is so. If all these images and these things are still in my mind, why can't I remember all your names? It's because memories, these collections of connections, these neurons and dendrites, these synapses, I should have checked on how to pronounce that. We'll just go with synapses. They're just floating around in there. And to retrieve or recall your memories, we need to hook them from this sea of memories and pull them out. That's what happens when you remember something. But some memories don't have very many hooks, and so you can't ever find them. And these hooks are things like smells and sounds and feels and feelings and emotions and fears. All these things are different hooks that you use to retrieve these memories. And some memories don't have any hooks, and so you can't retrieve, or you have a very hard time retrieving them. And so let's talk a little bit about how memories, sticky memories work. My earliest memory that I can remember is when I was about 3 years old. And by the way, if you want to read interesting things, read. There's a lot of literature, and I'll tell you about some of these, about how tricky your memories are. We think we know something. We think we remember something, and we fabricated it. But there is one memory that it's a very accurate memory. When I was about 3 years old, we lived in Montana, and I was very small, and it was a cold. I don't know if it was winter or spring, but it was pretty cold, and I was outside of our house, and we had this gigantic billy goat that was tied up on this little patch of leafy spurge to eat all the leafy spurge so that it wouldn't spread and contaminate the alfalfa fields. Well, this billy goat had gotten loose. And I remember standing on the porch. We had this little, it's not a porch, it was like a little concrete slab outside of our house, and it was cold, and the billy goat was loose. And it was close, and I could smell it. It was a stinky billy goat, and I could smell it, and I remember being absolutely terrified of that billy goat coming and getting me and doing whatever billy goats do to people. and my sister was there with me. And we sat there and we shivered and we shook, and because I was too small to reach the doorknob to open up the door. And but that memory is very sticky, because I have the smell of that billy goat and the sounds of my dad trying to chase it in, and just the fear of that billy goat. It's a very, very sticky memory. And then the cold of the day. It's lots of hooks to pull that memory out. Another memory I have that is a sticky memory is when I was very, very young. I don't know how young. We were at my grandmother's house in Missouri, and we had a Christmas party. It was at Christmas time. And we stayed up late, and we were playing games, and we were drinking, I don't know what we were drinking, tea or something. And we made these chocolate-covered pretzels, big, long pretzels, and we coated them with chocolate, and they were sweet and salty and really good. And I just remember that so clearly because it was so special, and that salty sweetness, that was just so good. And we're good at remembering things like that, tastes and smells and the family all around and the light. But those are sticky memories. And I also remember when I was outside this schoolhouse when I was teaching out here, and I was out there front, and we were having our Halsey garage sale thing here, and I remember hearing somebody called me from North Carolina and told me that my brother had been crushed by a tree. This very brother, by the way. And he didn't die, thank the Lord. But I thought he did die. And I remember everything. I remember the feeling. Wow, boy, I get all emotional. But it was a tremendously sticky memory. The sunshine and how the shadows were, what everybody said. And if you think back to the days of tragedy in your own lives, maybe when the Twin Towers were hit, maybe you remember exactly where you were and what you were doing. Those memories are tied very tightly to this tragedy, and you'll never forget the tragedy, and so these memories are tied to it, and therefore you remember that you were eating cornflakes, which is pretty boring compared to the Twin Towers collapsing. This is one of the secrets of memorization, how your memory works, and we're going to talk about how to capitalize on that, this knowing what our brain memorizes well. Okay, now we're going to talk about the actual art of memorization. This is very bad. We're going to have to really move. But let's stop here and let's think. There are two steps to remembering anything. And the first step is to create an image in your mind. And an image, this is limited only by your own imagination. And people and scientists know, we know, teachers know that our imaginations are almost unlimited. So let's just make an image here. Imagine in this room, let's imagine an elephant. Now, when you read or hear the word elephant, you automatically assume that it's a big gray animal, and you keep right on going. We know what elephants are, but a little bit later, there's a good chance you'll forget it. But let's sit here and let's build an image of an elephant. He's huge, and he's in this room. He's so big, he keeps knocking this light loose up here, and he smells bad, and he's dirty. And I want you to think about these images. And his trunk is down. It keeps kind of moving back and forth on the carpet. And every now and then you hear in his great big stomach, kind of like some of us when we didn't eat our breakfast, like me, I should say. But an elephant makes it much bigger sound. And his tusks are here, and I have to keep kind of moving because as he turns his head, his tusks are getting me. And then let's imagine this elephant is completely covered with ketchup. And it's dripping on the floor, and we're worried about David Hertzler cleaning up the carpets. And you know what? As we picture this image and we take a moment with it, it'll never leave you. 20 years from now, if you remember this talk at all, you'll remember this gigantic ketchup-covered elephant that was standing there and making a real fool of itself in this classroom. Right? All right, now let's remember, this elephant is here. Let's remember over there on that desk, let's imagine a glass of lemonade. This is not your normal glass of lemonade. This is big. This is like a 55-gallon barrel. And it's full of lemonade. And there's ice in it and there's lemons and we assume that it's really sweet. It probably is pretty sweet. And the sides of the barrel are all frosty with the lemonade. And it's a glass barrel, so we can see in there. We can see the lemons and the strawberries and a mint leaf or two in there. And then the Carol Mast, who's sitting right there beside the lemonade, happens to lean against it a little bit, and it comes down right on top of her. And the first thing we think about is, oh, what a terrible waste of lemonade. And then the next thing we think about is, oh, poor Carol. But we're so thirsty because we've been in here for so long that we go over there and lick around on the lemonade, and it's sour. Right? You're never going to forget about the lemonade. Ever. Next thing, let's imagine one more thing here. Let's remember that the floor of this room is one gigantic pepperoni pizza. The elephant, when he was walking around here on the floor and messing up the carpets for David Hertzler, was walking on the pizza. And the cheese was smearing, and we're worried about our Sunday shoes because they're nice shoes. And then all that pizza sauce, and the smell is just all around us. And it's really hot in here because the pizza was hot, and it's just kind of steamy and pizza-y and smelly, and it's just a good... Create an image. And we're going to talk a little bit about turning facts and things we want to remember into images to remember them. That is the secret. Now, the next thing you have to do with creating a memory is file it somewhere where you can find it. Because we all know, sometimes we know something, we know somebody's name, we know it so well, but we can't recall it. We're just like, oh, it's just on the tip of my tongue, what is his name, oh, or what is the name of that book? You know, it's just like you have a library at home, and you have a book, and you know it's there, but you can't remember where you laid it, right? So we're going to tell you, where I'm going to tell you this morning, how to file these memories so that you can find them again. Now, one thing that our brain is incredibly good at remembering is spatial things. The layout of rooms, the way the street looks, you think about your home. Maybe the first home you ever lived in, maybe the home you're living in now. You know where everything is. You walk through the door, you know where the counters are, the kitchen counters, you know where the recliner is, you know where the rug is. We know all those things. We've been in the school for a few days, and we know pretty well where everything is. We know where to go. We know where the bathrooms are. We know our mind is really, really, really good at remembering spatial things, how things are laid out. So what we're going to do in our minds when we make these things is we're going to put them places where we can recall them. Okay, so let's just imagine we are going to, well, we did it in this classroom. The pizza was where? On the floor. And where was the elephant standing? Right here. And the lemonade? Right there. Okay, if you do that, you make your list of things that you want to remember, you create images, and you put them in places in your memory. It works even better in your mind. If you think about your home, all right, let's just put these objects somewhere else. Let's put the elephant squeezing through the front door, and it's not going. But the ketchup is all smearing off. You have to spend a moment on these things and make the memories real. Make them exaggerated. Make them weird. Our mind loves things like that. We are kind of all like Dr. Seuss deep down inside. The extraordinary, the strange, the thing ding dilly or whatever they are. Our minds like to remember those things. When you're trying to remember, okay, let's just remember, let me teach you a little Bangla here. The word for blood in Bangla is rakto. Right? Okay, your teacher can tell you that, and if you're learning a whole bunch of Bangla 5 minutes later, you're going to forget that blood means rakto. But if we pause and we wait a little bit, and we make a memory, and let's think about rakto, rock and toe. I'm getting a memory here. I'm getting an idea. Let's say we stubbed our toe on the rock so hard, there's a big rock, and it's an ugly, knobbly rock, and we stubbed our toe so hard that it came off. And there's blood all over. And it happened right at that door when we were walking in. And we can't walk right anymore because of the blood and the rakto by that door, right? That's by the door. Now let's talk about another word. Let's talk about the Bangla word for night, for darkness. No, for night. Is rat. Rat. Which is kind of like rat. Rot. Imagine this room was dark. That's why you didn't see the rock over there. And we came in and we were there holding the stump of our toe. And we see this gigantic rat scuttle out that door into the night. This rot. This black rot who was laughing at our busted off toe. Right? All right? We just learned two Bangla words. And if we would spend a little bit more time, which we do not have, we could learn whole lists of things in this room. We could learn it just by putting objects all over this room. And you know what? It stays in your mind. The pizza's still on the floor. The lemonade's over there. The rock is by the door. The rat is going out the door. It's all there. It's in your mind. And you can do this with any information out there. Now, I was going to spend a lot more time on this stuff, but we're not going to, because there's something else I want to tell you. How do we teach this method of memorization? We want our students to remember things. We want it. How do we teach it? First of all, just knowing how your mind works is a tremendous step in how to teach. When you're up here, when you're teaching English, when you're teaching math, when you lecture, they won't remember. It'll be tremendously hard. Turn this stuff into images. Turn it into living, breathing, maybe even bleeding images. Somehow our mind really remembers bleeding images. I don't know why. When you're teaching about an insect, the head, thorax, abdomen, right, that's pretty simple. Sometimes your third grader has a horrible time remembering the thorax. But let's think about a bug up here. Let's make an image of this ginormous abdomen that's soft and puffy. And let's tie that together. Let's make images of what we're trying to teach. And in English, make images in your times tables. Turn these little numbers into monsters or animals or people and make them do things. Tote those numbers. You know, make this. It's up to you as a teacher. Make these things sticky. Make them into images and do them. And if you want to, I'm not going to be able to give you enough information here to for you to be able to do this effectively, but get these books and read them. Especially for a very simple book in the beginning, get this book right here, Unlimited Memory, by Grandmaster Kevin Horsley. Now, incidentally, Kevin Horsley was extremely dyslexic. Extremely dyslexic. He couldn't slog his way through school. But when he learned about these memory techniques, his life changed completely. By imagining words differently, he learned to read like a trooper and became a prolific writer. His life changed completely because of looking at information differently. And I just want to tell you, all the information I found points to these techniques as being absolutely mind-bogglingly groundbreaking in dealing with dyslexic people. Put that in your minds. Do your own research. This is actually pretty exciting. And you know what? My very slight experience teaching dyslexic people, I believe it works that way. Because unconsciously I did these things. And the way that I taught, not a great teacher or anything like that. But the way that I taught some of those things, those images, those stories, those sticky things, those are the things those dyslexic boys remembered and never forgot and used. And I think just use it that way. Teaching images, teaching stories. Our minds love stories. Tell them stories. Make the stories full of animals and images and things. They'll remember them. And that's the goal. Always tie new information vividly with something they already know. That's a very basic truth of learning. Tie it to something they already know. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to give them hooks to remember these things. With these stories and illustrations, we're trying to give them hooks in their mind that'll tell them what thorax means and abdomen and all that stuff. And also teach this method of making images and putting them in locations to represent knowledge. Now, all your students might not use it, but some of them will, and it will be tremendously effective. Also, another thing, I could have a long talk on this, but mess with the sounds of words. Washington is our first president. Let's imagine him, this curly-haired guy, at the sink, washing a tin, kind of like Washington, you know what I'm saying? And he's getting his suit coat all soapy. He's washing, and the tin cut him on the finger just a little bit. I don't know why he would wash tin, but that's what he was doing. And you know what? Your students will remember George Washington washing a tin, and that name will stick in their mind. Do this with other names. Do this with any kind of facts. Or we'll leave that for now. We'll just leave that. That is a very effective method, probably the most effective method. But I want to talk with you a little bit now about teaching Bible memory. People use this method of images and locations to very, very, very effectively learn the Bible and classic books. I could tell you a lot of stories about things that people memorized. I'll tell you two. The Talmudic scholars in Poland studying the Torah, the Talmud, could memorize the Torah in its entirety to pinpoint accuracy. Now, what that means is the book, the literal book they memorized, I could sit here and poke a pin through that book. They could look at the pin and the placement of the pin in the book, and they could tell you every word it poked through. This is documented. This is not only memorizing the material. This is memorizing the particular book. The placement of the words on the page. This is mind-blowing. There's a very modern person, a secular person, who memorized the Old Man of the Sea. Not with a pin, but you could ask him, well, he could of course recite it. That's the very simple. But he could tell you, if I ask him, what's the third word in the fourth sentence on page 57? And he could tell you, using this technique. Now, but for your student, but to learn at that caliber, word for word stuff, is actually really hard to teach. It takes a while, because teaching word for word rote memorization is a little trickier than just teaching facts, because you have to remember all the words. A much more effective way of remembering this, let me just play you something here.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين.
Do you know what that is? It is the reading of the Quran, and it is beautiful. It's false doctrine, but it's beautiful. And one of my friends in Bangladesh memorized the Quran word for word by the time he was 12. That's pretty good. But he's not alone. There are thousands and thousands of little Islamic boys who do that. But that's beautiful. That's the beginning of the first hadith, the first chapter of the Quran. Now, it's much more beautiful than reading to them, "In the beginning was the Word." In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. All right? They have put the Quran into something beautiful. And when I taught school here, one of the last years we taught, my class and I learned a section of Bible memory. And it started like this: in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And it was a long section, and I just want to tell you something. They did an amazing, incredible job on that. I tried to find the recording of it and bring it here, but I could not find it. But it literally sounded like this: in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. That's how it sounded. And you know what? You remember that stuff. Is there a way, as a teacher, you can turn the blah reading of the Bible? It should never be that. Turn it into something beautiful. And now some practical things about Bible memory. I'm going to be very quick here. Okay, if you want to learn Scripture, and you want to learn it right, and you want to learn it easily, the very best way I know of is just saying the chapter every morning, the whole chapter you're learning, with your students. And saying it with passion and fervor every morning. Not the verses you're learning, not the verses before and after, but from verse 1 to verse 36 every morning. And it takes a little bit of time, but you know what? They'll learn that memory better than you ever imagined they could. And another helpful little thing they did at this school, which is actually a really good idea, see if you can get your whole school on board with learning the same Bible memory. From first grade to 12th grade, we're all learning Philippians this year. First grade obviously doesn't get very far, but for the parents at home, they're all teaching their children the same chapter. And it's just, there's a whole lot more learning that goes on that way. But, yeah, you know what? We're going to be done with that. A very trouble-free way of learning Bible memory. Now, a little word to you. I will pull this to a stop here. A little word to you. There's a book out there called Mistakes Were Made But Not By Me. And another book called The Memory Illusion, that tell you about the faultiness of your memories. There's some stories about that, but we're not going to talk about them. Our minds can and do rewrite things erroneously. If we want something to be true, our mind is capable of rewriting memories to make it be that way. So be careful with what you think is absolutely true. What I told you today is an opportunity to change the way, or maybe you already knew all this stuff, but to change the way you see your mind and its potential. The implications of this method and system and your own potential are staggering. I was only able to give you a tiny glimpse into this fascinating world of memory. And if you are interested, read these books. And find your own books. Study and practice this method yourself. And the possibility and potential in your own life and in the lives of your students are truly without limits. God bless you all very, very much. You are dismissed.
Thank you.